Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Happy to be with you on The Advertising Show. It is Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth back for yet another exciting week here. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit Ad Age online at adage.com. That's a handy-dandy address to have. We've got Ray and Brad, and our special guest today is Kevin Berry, Vice President of Local Sales and Marketing for the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. We pulled out some old television themes, things that you would have heard on the network a long time ago,
right,
and that are now featured, of course, on cable. So it'll be fun time with Kevin.
If you're a fan of TV Land, you'll certainly be familiar with these.
You get your overdose of stuff here.
These jingles. So, Ray, have you heard about of course, you're a fan of Wayne Brady's, right?
Sure.
Familiar with his syndicated talk show, which I must tell you, he has come a long way since he launched his show. The Wayne Brady Show Buena Vista's host of the Wayne Brady Show will host the 30th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards coming up soon. The show will be presented live from Radio City Music Hall in New York on May 16th. And, of course, you may have caught it recently. Good old Wayne hosted the Miss America competition, which my wife always makes me watch.
Your wife makes you watch Miss America?
She likes to watch that, and I just say, cue me when we get to the bathing suit competition.
That's your favorite part,
that
right?
That is correct.
Much better than just the questions they ask, right?
I like that, too, to see what kind of bimbos they have up there. But they're getting better at those questions, I must say.
Yes, they are.
And they're getting more difficult, whereas years ago when we were single, you'd watch it, and they'd say, so what is your favorite color, and explain why.
Blue, and because it's the color of your eyes.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Well, that's good. Burt Parks brings back memories of Burt Parks. And when he used to do the Miss America thing, too, so.
Apparently you don't – well, he's – I guess Wayne's a singer, and so he – I guess that one of the keys
is – that not like a prerequisite?
You've got to sing a song? You have to know the song.
Here she comes. Which is why I'm not a host of the Miss America pageant.
Nor one of the competitors in the beauty bathing suit competition.
Thank God. Yeah. If you're thirsty for some new Coors beer ads, you're going to be able to get them. They have created 18 of 31 spots shown to their distributors just recently. The reception generally warm. Coors Light spots getting the best reaction, but none appealing to the appearing to bring down the house, according to one attendee at a convention held recently, too. So we've got some new beer spots on the way for Coors. Do you think there'll be anything like the ones that Bob Garfield loves so much? I don't think so.
What's interesting is they're giving them to individual distributors, so apparently they're doing some kind of customization there, Ray, wouldn't you think?
I would imagine so, and that's really smart to be able to do that. Obviously, they've got a common thread throughout that whole thing, too. Mm-hmm. You know, every week on The Advertising Show, one of our slogans, or one of our brands, actually, is the world of advertising, media, and marketing. It's demystifying the world of advertising, media, and marketing. And one way that we do that is every week we focus on some of the good stuff and some of the not-so-good stuff. And this is not to slam the people who have created the not-so-good stuff. But what we try and do is kind of help you understand a little bit better what's good, why it works, of course, from our perspective. And this is called Goodvertising. Brad, if you are ready to do this, we will go ahead and
We're going with the bad this week.
Oh, we're going with the bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that's a change of plans here for good old Ray. So we'll go to a different cut on my CD. Hang on just a minute. Okay. Hey, let's try cut 4.
There you go.
Let's see how that works. Here we go.
And now it's time for the Badvertising item of the week.
And by the way, anyone listening knows we don't over-rehearse here on The Advertising Show. The Badvertising item of the week is Old Navy television commercials. I'm sure you've seen the campaign. We have one in particular that the denim game you may have seen. Mm-hmm. It's an Old Navy spot produced in-house. The spot, just to get everybody's memory up and running with this spot, opens with the dating game theme music. You've certainly seen it, Ray. I know because we talked about it. And, of course, the old dating game TV set you see as the host, which is not, of course, Jim Lang. It is the guy who's been the male counterpart for Morgan Fairchild for most of, not all of, the entire Old Navy TV campaign over the past year or so. As the spot continues, as it's opening, and here he comes out from behind the wall there, you see the three bachelors appearing eager to answer the questions of the Bachelorette.
Sure.
Again, who is Morgan Fairchild? She will play an integral part in why they achieve the advertising item of the week. Morgan asked them to describe in their sexiest voice what kind of jeans they're wearing. Contestant number one answers by describing his Old Navy bootcut jeans. And, of course, the host goes on to give a price point on the jeans and closes out the spot. In my opinion, the reason the spot was selected as this week's advertising item of the week, Ray, has everything to do with the distraction of Morgan Fairchild, who is, you know, edging on maybe too old to even be these bachelor's mother,
right,
is supposed to be the sexual interest of these young, early 20-something males. And in my opinion, it's rather confusing to see Morgan Fairchild, Bachelorette, to these young lads. And I can't believe the in-house agency would have actually let this silliness go on. It's a great spot. It's a great concept. Unfortunately, I've always had a little puzzlement with why Morgan Fairchild has even been aligned with the guy who plays the MC on this particular piece,
who has
traveled throughout all of the commercials as a pair. I look at those two and I say, how could this couple have any kind of attraction? There's an age and a generational gap there. So,
and what they were trying to do there, because obviously they've used Fairchild before in some of these other ad campaigns for Old Navy.
Right.
She fit better into the Brady Bunch clone ad, and what was the other one that they did?
It was the Green Acres.
The Green Acres thing. Now, that was an odd one because none of those people looked at all like the Green Acres. They had the theme, Brad, but they didn't have the focus of the theme.
They threw the pitchfork, when the guy was doing the hay. That was as close as they got to the execution. But anyway, it's a decent idea, and they have, interestingly enough, if you watch these Old Navy commercials, Ray, they have changed it up, and you will see a young female playing the role of Morgan Fairchild, and she's not on some of the spots. So maybe they're getting some feedback. I don't know.
So the main thread here is to keep it believable.
That's my
Keep it believable. Mm-hmm. Don't give the audience something that they can't fathom.
Exactly.
That's too far out there. And again, you can apply this locally as well as nationally. There is nothing stopping you from making a good point locally with a great ad, whether it be radio or in this particular case television.
We often cover here on the advertising show examples of the requirement of the listener or the viewer to suspend reality, and that's not a bad thing. But when the stretch is a little too far, I think is where you end up losing your potential audience.
You know, Sears recently purchased Land's End, and they've got some Land's End stuff in the stores right now, which is kind of a sad ending for Land's End, as far as I'm concerned, because to pair up with Sears, they were distinctly different and distinctly better, really.
Is it an example of maybe where the catalog business is going? Because Land's End, I guess, was entirely based until the internet came about.
With catalog, right? Mm-hmm. But it's odd to see this stuff. Sears, Roebuck and Company, which is in the process of selling off its credit card division. What is that Discover, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And remodeling stores to include recently acquired Land's End is making changes to one of its key marketing strategies. The whole company is focused on the customer. That is a change for us, a company spokesperson said. What we're trying to communicate to our customer in a simple, interesting way, the great merchandise we have to offer. She said it's all about Sears as a destination, just like the Land's End catalog was as a destination. And, of course, you know, we still get the Land's End catalogs, too. I mean, they're giving us that stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know where they're headed with that whole thing.
Time will tell.
Kevin Berry is our special guest on today's The Advertising Show. Kevin is vice president of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe. Fondly referred to us as Simpsons sometimes.
Right? Which would you be?
I'd probably be Homer.
Okay.
As we talk with Kevin Berry today, Vice President of Local Sales and Marketing for the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Let's talk a little bit about Kevin before we get him on the line here. Kevin is in New York today. Kevin joined the CAB in 96 As VP Local Sales and Marketing, he is responsible for overseeing the efforts of the CAB in assisting its cable system members in maximizing advertising revenues. Well, there you go. That's what it's all about. He sits as the Board of Director of the Retail Advertising and Marketing Association and the Cable Advertising Association of New York. He also serves on the Media Advisory Committee of the Advertising Council. He holds a BA in Geology from Hamilton College. He resides in Ashurokan, New York. Kevin, is that right?
You got it right.
Yay.
Ashurokan.
Ashurokan.
Yeah.
There you go. And, Kevin, it sure is good to have you on the advertising show today. You are such a wealth of information. Even in person, you do a great presentation for your industry and for advertising in general.
You know, I'm looking at Kevin's bio here, Ray. And, Kevin, I must tell you, for an industry trade executive to have actual hands-on experience in your industry, you were an account executive for Cablevision on Long Island in New York several years ago, I guess back in the mid-'80s. Did you know then when you started in the repping for cable television that that was something you wanted to pursue?
I knew that I wanted to be involved in the media in some ways, and back then in the mid-'80s, the cable had the same sense of limitless possibilities that that the Internet had a couple of years ago. And fortunately for our medium, you know, it's borne out. We've experienced terrific growth for 17 years I've been in the business.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed that you're on the Media Advisory Committee for the Advertising Council. I guess you have the pleasure of meeting with Peggy Conlon from time
to
time.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. That's a great organization, and, you know, it's fun for us to be a part of that and to help to get all the Ad Council messages out as efficiently as possible to as many people as we can.
Peggy was a guest here on the advertising show many months ago, and I got to tell you, she was a treat to have on the air, Ray, and it was a great interview.
Yeah, it was a great interview.
Yeah. Let's begin for our audience that may not be familiar with the Cable Television Advertising Bureau and define your membership so people will understand what the CAB is all about.
Sure. We're a trade association, but unlike most trade associations, we don't have a presence in Washington. Our brief is to help our members sell more advertising, and our members consist of cable TV networks like Discovery and ESPN and MTV, and cable TV system operators like AOL, Time Warner, and Comcast, and Cablevision, and Charter, and Cox.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is to help each of those constituencies position themselves so that they're able to reap the rewards that they I think they deserve because of the gains they've made in their audience.
And your website, cabletvadbureau.com, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Would a consumer listening that is an advertiser, say, that is looking to access more information about cable television, would they have anything any reason to benefit by visiting your website, or is that more for your MSOs and your members?
No, it's actually designed for your listeners. It's designed for advertisers and agencies and just curious members of the public who want to learn more about our business. We have a private conditional access website that's for our members that we keep in the back room, but this is a website where if you want to learn more about our medium, both in terms of the values that we offer to you as an advertiser or just who to get in touch with. You know, we have links pages if you're in Memphis and you want to know who to contact in Memphis to you know, buy some advertising, or if you're a national advertiser and you want to know how to contact E! Entertainment Television.
Mm-hmm.
The contact numbers are right there. You can link right to their websites.
You know, I often wonder how many viewers actually know the difference between their viewing habits when they're watching broadcast television versus cable. I think that line has blurred a lot lately, don't you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I really do. You know, it's all TV. And there's a letter that goes each year to the professors at Beloit College in Wisconsin. And that letter is kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it spells out the differences with the incoming class of freshmen. And 2 years ago, the letter said, among other things, this group coming in, and it's so that the faculty realizes how things change and how these kids coming in are different. Anyway, a couple years ago, it said, the incoming group of freshmen has never heard a telephone ring. The incoming group of freshmen has only once known a presidential race where someone named George Bush wasn't on the ballot.
You're kidding.
And wow. And the incoming group of freshmen was born after the launch of Nickelodeon.
Hmm.
So they've never known a world where there wasn't cable TV. And to them, and to increasingly to the rest of us, you know, you go to the stuff you like, and I don't think you really say to yourself, gee, I really want to watch some MTV tonight, or gee, I really want to watch some ABC tonight.
It's all programming. Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, you can add to your incoming freshman commentary and add, let's say, incoming freshman thought that Paul McCartney was in a band, of course, called
Wings before
he went out on his own. You know, you recently just got back, I guess, from a conference. I say got back. It happened in your home market there of New York, the Cable Advertising Bureau. I guess it was called the Ad Conference. Sum up for us, if you would, Kevin, the highlights of the event. I know you had keynote speaker Richard Parsons, CEO of AOL Time Warner.
Yeah.
Not just his speaking engagement, but overall, what would you consider the highlights of your event there?
Well, the theme of the conference was cable first. And since we last spoke, fellas, I think we talked last spring, cable achieved a milestone in the 2001-2002 TV season, and that's, you know, the TV year runs from fourth quarter or October, when all the new shows premiere, through the end of the summer, through the following September. So in the 2001-2002 TV year, there was more viewing to ad-supported cable than there was to all broadcast television combined, and that's in all TV homes. And that was a big milestone for us. It's, you know, back when I got my start, we were 10% of all viewership, and now we're half of all viewership. And the theme cable first refers to the idea that rather than, you know, lay in a base of broadcast television and then sort of fill in the edges with cable, you can build reach and you can do all those things with cable first.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, as now the market share leader in terms of viewership, it's a logical starting point. Now, I know we're definitely being kind of forward in our thinking, and we're pushing people because that's got a discordant ring to it. Wow, cable first. But, you know, when you really think about it, it makes sense, and we definitely want to be out in front and help to move thinking in that area. So the whole theme of the conference was that. It was cable first, the move to cable. We certainly recognize that there's value in broadcast television. It's part of us. You know, we're television. We believe in television. We believe in the power of sight, sound, motion, emotion. And I know I'm talking on the radio, and you know, radio's got a great role for it to play. But in the world of television, we're half of the equation, or even a little bit more than half of the equation. And so the theme of the conference was, why don't you start there first?
You know, I'm surprised that that's not even more than a half for cable television. You would think I would see you at more like three quarters, of the viewership.
Well, we're three quarters of the, three quarters of the homes.
Yeah.
And thanks for overstating our influence. that's for ad-supported basic cable. It's viewership to ESPN and TNT and CNN. It's not
C-SPAN
it's not the viewership to ABC and cable homes. That's not, you know, that goes into the cable and into the broadcast ledger.
Okay.
Right, and then it also doesn't include HBO and Showtime. That's on top of that. But just the viewership of your basic cable, that is now half of all the viewership in all TV homes, not in cable homes, but in all TV homes.
Well, Kevin, after the break, I'd like to you had a forum called What's Hot on Cable, and I'd like to get into that right after the break.
It's the Advertising Show. Our special guest is Kevin Berry, Vice President of Local Sales and Marketing for the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. If you're listening on the radio right now, would like to go online to find out more, you can go to cabletvadbureau.com. Of course, we also invite you to get online with the Advertising Show, where we're streaming live globally here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. This is a Big Radio Midgets production. We are so happy to be with you. We've got to take a break for the wacky world of marketing, which is always a hoot, or maybe two.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be back in just a minute, too, with the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsythe, and Kevin Berry.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing. Wacky World of Marketing. Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update for this week heads to Atlanta, where the New York Daily News reports they may expect Southern charm, but some Belt South Internet customers found the service was a little too friendly when they called a toll-free number listed in the phone book. For those of you who wonder if the Yellow Pages works, the number for a phone sex operation was mistakenly printed in most of the 50 million residential phone books the company sent out in the past year. The mistake was caught when a customer complained. The wrong number was listed in the front customer guide section of the White Pages. However, the correct number was still under the appropriate heading in the business listings. Bell South had considered buying the phone sex operations number to avoid confusion with its customers, but then abandon that idea. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
It's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth back with you. We're talking TV today. The Cable Television Advertising Bureau, the Vice President, Kevin Berry. And that's the Cosby.
Oh, sure. That's where they would dance in the beginning of the show, I believe.
Right. You had to think that Bill Cosby also had a hand in designing the music because he's always been good, really, really good at that kind of stuff, too. So back with you on the Advertising Show, Ray and Brad, and our special guest, Kevin Berry. Kevin, thanks so much for being a part of the show today.
My pleasure.
You know, before the break, we were talking about the Cable Television Advertising Bureau's recent ad conference, which you identified as Cable First, being the theme held in New York. Keynote speaker Richard Parsons, CEO of AOL Time Warner. You had a forum during that event where several program creators were roundtable, I guess, discussing what's hot on cable. So, Kevin, what's hot on cable?
Well, some of the stuff that that those folks discussed is the series Monk, which was kind of groundbreaking for us. It stars Tony Shalhoub, and it was produced for USA Network, and appeared on USA, and then it moved, or in its second incarnation, it ran on ABC, and it did great on USA, and in fact, it did pretty well on ABC. But that's the first time, to my knowledge, that a program gets its first run on cable and is created for cable, and then it gets a secondary life on a broadcast network. And you know, back in the mid '80s and the early '90s, when I got my start in cable, things worked the other way around. They get a show like The Cosby Show would be on NBC, and then now has a second life on TV Land. But in the case of Monk, which is just a terrific show, and in fact, Tony Shalhoub won a Golden Globe Award for his work on Monk, and that's work, I guess, that was premiered on USA, and then later repeats were on ABC. So that was one of the things that was hot. And what this showcase did was it was an interview with Jules Asner, who's a great interviewer for E. Sat down and spent a few minutes talking with the heads of programming or the heads of the networks for a number of our members. Some of the other things that they talked about, she spent some time with Billy Campbell, who's the new president of Discovery Networks, and in fact, that's my alma mater. I didn't work for Billy, but I worked at Discovery for 7 years back in the 90s, and two of the shows they have that are just kicking are on TLC. One is called Trading Spaces, and I don't know if you guys are acquainted with that show, but it's just a phenomenon. And then a show that just premiered a couple of weeks ago called What Not to Wear.
Oh, that's an incredible – well, it's not a ripoff. I'm not going to say that, but you've got the What Not to Wear from the BBC.
Exactly.
America, and it's real interesting because they've got the two ladies on that show who do the promos for the show. But they don't actually do the show. You know where the British ladies do. They take the show all the way through. But that is a fantastic, fantastic show.
Yeah, I actually watched an episode this past weekend and really enjoyed it, really appreciated it. Fun show. And, of course, you guys are in radio, so you don't have to worry about, what to wear. But I get to see it in public.
No, we know what not to wear.
We
know what not to wear.
We dressed up for this interview.
Yeah, we did.
yeah, I can see that.
And by the way, we call cable and broadcast television radio with pictures, so it's just kind of a perspective thing.
I understand.
When you mentioned what not to wear, is that also on TLC?
Yeah, what not to wear. It's a recent premiere on the network, and I think it is on Saturday nights. And
Changing Rooms started on BBC America. That's where Trading Spaces came from.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's in the best tradition of TV. I mean, the All in the Family came from a BBC show called Till Death Do Us Part.
That's right.
Certainly isn't the first time we've borrowed some good ideas from over the pond. And, of course, all the reality programming that we're afflicted with on broadcast TV, Survivor and all that jazz, and Millionaire and all that stuff, premiered on the other side of the pond, and then we brought it back over this way.
Well, let me say something about Trading Spaces as well, or what they're doing. There's another one. What is it? While You Were Out, the program While You Were Out.
Yeah.
Cable TV is driving people to the TLC website. They're supposed to vote on their favorite shows, and, of course, they'll tally up the results and broadcast those a week later. What a great idea. TLC does an incredible job of marketing themselves.
Yep. And, I was there when we acquired the Learning Channel. The Learning Channel, which is great, but it sounds like spinach on television,
So, right.
They rebranded it as TLC, and it's really performing terrific. One of the biggest increases year to year in audience of any cable network.
Well, that's back to those incoming freshmen thought TLC was, something else, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting you bring up Trading Spaces. We reported many weeks ago that there was a research done on consumers or viewers in particular that were familiar with Trading Spaces, and the vast majority, you may have read this, Kevin, the vast majority of viewers familiar with Trading Spaces attributed that program to HGTV and not TLC.
Well, as long as they watch the commercials on TLC, they do, it doesn't really even, we were talking about it, it's all TV, right?
It's all cross-promotion, too. Right?
Yeah, so if they think they saw it on another channel, and yet they saw the commercials because that's what pays for the programming, then that's then we're doing the right thing for the advertisers.
I think it was shortly thereafter that HGTV came out with a Trading Spaces, let's say, version B of that same program.
Something like that. Well, that's we were talking about great television traditions, and of course that's one of the best ones of all is imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
There's also a great one too from the BBC America called Ground Force. Which also has crossed over into, other areas, too. It's a good show.
It's not unusual. I guess we're getting a lot of our programming from both Europe and Asia. Certainly the reality programming, which we're going to talk about in a minute, Kevin, seems to originate from both Europe and Asian markets. Wanted to follow up. You mentioned Monk and its USA crossover to ABC.
Let's hold on to that thought for just a moment, though, Brad.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Sure.
We take a break here?
Sure.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And we'll be back in just a minute. Our special guest is Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau.
Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Back with you on the Advertising Show for yet another segment with our special guest, Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Boy, what a popular show that is, Law & Order. And I'm not sure where that started. Did it start on the...
It
was broadcast.
Yeah.
And ironically, it's still broadcast, mm-hmm. but it's also on cable. Am I right, Kevin?
That's correct.
Okay.
They call
still doing great numbers for cable.
That's a cult show, no doubt, in a good way.
You mentioned Monk starting on USA Network and coming over to ABC, and it really says a lot, I think, coming the other direction. And we all know that for many years, cable was the recipient of, I guess, pre-owned, as they would say in the automotive business, pre-owned programming. But
certified pre-owned programming.
Yeah,
it was a hit.
But it's about repurposing in some cases. But here's a situation where Vivendi owning USA Networks and ABC, of course, Disney coming back the other way. That would be the programming and syndication folks seeing to it that program makes another place in broadcast history, coming back to the broadcast television networks. Let's talk a little bit, Kevin, if I can and if we can, about where do you see the internet and the TV cable box? Is it going to be one day where all internet access ends up on the cable box for all Americans? Do you think?
I think it's not the best way to. It's not the best way to surf. There's a classic distinction in media usage. It's called lean forward and lean back.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet and computer usage is very much a lean forward. And I don't think I even have to explain to you what I mean by that. Whereas TV is lean back and entertain me and there may be a future, and there's an emergent future in interactive television, but there's always going to be a significant amount of time for lean back television, where you just kind of veg out at the end of a long day and get entertained and have someone tell you a story. You know, we're a species that for thousands of years has gathered around fires and listened to people tell us stories, and now that fire is an electronic hearth, and we still like to be told stories. The Internet's different. The Internet's about communication, and email is, you know, which is maybe the most powerful application that's carried over the Internet, is one-to-one communication or you know, peer-to-peer communication. So I really don't see them coming together. I think what you'll find, though, is, you know, increasingly you have both appliances in the same room. You know, it's common for you to have a PC in your room, and as homes get networked for, you know, wirelessly networked for access to the Internet, and instead of having a computer set up, all you'll have is maybe like a little tablet about the size of an 8.5 by 11 pad, legal pad, and on that you can kind of tap in your what you want to get out of the Internet. You can sit there and you can watch a game on ESPN, and you can tap into ESPN.com and pick up some of the deeper analysis. But I don't think that that's going to be when you want to do it, and then you throw the tablet away and just watch the rest of the game. I don't see there's going to be a convergence in the appliances that we view TV and surf the Internet on.
Kind of sounds like an episode of The Jetsons, doesn't it, without the flying cars?
Right.
Well, it gets closer and closer, except the one thing that all those futuristic things have is flying cars.
Right.
And we're no closer to flying cars. You know, maybe someday we'll get there.
I hope we never get there. That could be very dangerous. But, can you imagine that?
Well, a lot of people don't know Ray does have a dog named Astro, so he's getting closer by the minute.
Car fly one time, too. It didn't work.
Some would argue that the TV, be it broadcast or cable, actually may be ending up on the monitor of computers and through Internet access, just the opposite of what we're talking about. Where do you see that, Kevin?
Well, there's some companies out there that seek to deliver videos, you know, DVD-quality videos, mm-hmm. over a cable broadband plant to your computer. And you know, and that scares the heck out of people who are in the creative community because of the copyright issues that are there. You know, you have a digital perfect copy delivered to someone's house.
Are you talking about digital on demand?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I, for one, would have a lot of trouble. You know, the only DVD in my house for a time was the one on my computer, and I brought a movie home. I brought Spinal Tap, which is my favorite movie, and I could only watch it for about 10 or 15 minutes at a time, though, on my computer. Because, you know, I'm not used to sitting there with a 16 or 17-inch screen when I've got a beautiful 38-inch screen upstairs in my living room.
Sure.
To watch a program on. So I think that if you're, you know, you're going to see some streaming video, you're going to see some full-motion video, certainly over your computer. You know, you get into work and you want to catch the highlights of last night's game, that's going to be delivered over the computer. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're ever going to have people who, given the choice between watching television on a television set, nice big monitor, or watching television on a screen that their eyes are 18 inches away from, are going to choose the latter. I think, you know, there's still going to be I don't think you're going to have convergence in the appliances that we view these things on. I think they're going to be they're still going to be separate.
Kevin Berry is our special guest on the Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth here.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Back with you on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. Got to get a great visual with that one, too. What a fantastic animation for the beginning of the HBO feature film, a cable TV show that was very, very popular.
Sure.
A while back ago.
Watched it frequently.
Had a great interview with Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. By the way, we mentioned the website earlier, but we want you to know it and hear it again. It's cabletvadbureau.com, and we want you to go to that site because, as Kevin said, there's a lot of useful stuff up there for local advertisers.
Right.
Very important. Very important.
Or if you're a media buyer at a major agency and don't have a clue what you're doing, that wouldn't be nice to say, would it, Ray?
Oh, that's too late. You just
but
said
But unfortunately,
it.
That sometimes
is the case.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a good place to go no matter what who you happen to be if you have an interest in cable.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ray, about you, but I have a couple of items here that I was going to talk about during the interview, but I'm going to hold that. And if we have time, I'll squeeze it in before the end of the hour. But
sure.
We did have a couple of email questions I did not get to, and I apologize for the listeners that sent those in. We will do always our best to get to all email, and unfortunately did not do that. So my apologies, please.
We're sorry.
Yeah.
TheAdvertisingShow.com is a place that you can most easily communicate with us here with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Coca-Cola has laid off just a couple of folks. Did you hear about that, Brad?
No, I'm still working.
500 from Atlanta, the Atlanta headquarters. They informed about 500 employees in marketing and other departments. They are being laid off, according to people familiar with the situation.
Hmm.
So who knows? If you have a cola product and you need somebody to help market it, well, these people are hungry for the business.
You know, they always say people that are close to the – what was that word did you use there?
What?
They always do those press releases the same way. So people close to the
– Close to the – yeah, familiar with the situation.
Yeah,
that
familiar
was a different
with the
twist,
situation.
Exactly.
That's called the public relations department.
Oh, and here's another one. Coca-Cola did not return telephone calls.
Oh, that's unusual.
That's yeah. One executive, again familiar with the situation, says it's a D-Day for a bunch of departments. Well, no kidding.
I didn't know Coke was having a problem. I guess, you know, it's nothing wrong with showing
up with a lighter version of Coke, right?
Our friend Sergio Zeman, who's been on our show, former CMO of Coke International, would probably like to spend an hour talking about that.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't you? NASCAR, Ray, I don't know if you heard about this. NASCAR said that, hold on to your seats, Jerry Springer, the Jerry Springer Show, has become the newest sponsor of the racing organization.
No, really?
And here's a line you don't hear very often. Financial terms were not released. As a partner sponsor for a total of 12 races in the Monaco NASCAR Winston West Series, the Jerry Springer Show logo will be prominently displayed on driver Kevin Richards' Chevrolet. Now, a camera will also be mounted inside Richards' car during the races. Who would have ever thought that Jerry Springer? Well, when you think about it, the people that attend, I guess, NASCAR?
Yeah.
Is that?
No, I would suggest that the people who attend NASCAR, that's a perfect.
Does that match up?
Perfect match.
Do you,
absolutely.
Do you see maybe a follow-up show after he gets going with the NASCAR events? You know, you might have a group of people on or a couple that says, you know, they always put that caption underneath the person. So in case you're just tuning in, you'll know what the conflict is all about.
Exactly.
One might say, I saw you at the race and you had new front teeth and I'm jealous or something like that, you know. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good way to put it. Hey, Andy Borowitz is a part of our show each and every week, and here he is right now.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
Hydrogen cars sound like a nice idea. But in order for them to catch on, suburban soccer moms would have to be willing to drive them. And unfortunately, they'd rather drive a vehicle that played a starring role during Operation Desert Storm, that gas-guzzling boat known as the Hummer. If you ask the moms, they'll say they need their Hummers to transport troops to karate classes, violin recitals, and gymboree. They'll say they have to drive a Hummer because it's so roomy. That's like me saying I have to ride a cruise missile to work because it's so fast and so smart. But I don't think the soccer mom's love affair with a Hummer has anything to do with roominess. It's all about raw, savage power. Today's soccer mom is totally stressed out, tyrannized by bossy children who have been endowed since preschool with perversely high levels of self-esteem. You've seen her in the mall, rolling with the punches as her extortionist children demanding the entire spring inventory of Abercrombie and Fitch. But put her behind the wheel of a Hummer, and it's a whole different story. She becomes the mother of all mothers. Whatever oversized army vehicle gets the most screen on CNN will in 5 years become the hottest car in the suburbs. A leading candidate for this role is a light armored vehicle, or LAV, known in military circles as the Piranha. With its windowless body and 12.7-millimeter gun turret, it's going to look real scary parked outside a Starbucks.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
And we will be back here with The Advertising Show in just a minute. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit Ad Age online at adage.com. This is a Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. This is The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
And, of course, The Advertising Show focuses on all aspects of advertising, whether it be television or radio or outdoor, any type of media. This week, our specialty is cable television. Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau, is our special guest and will be joining us here in just a moment to have some good conversation. And Kevin will be with us for just a little while.
He's a great guest.
Absolutely. We are back. It's Ray and Brad. The Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit Ad Age online at adage.com. This is a Big Radio Midgets production. They're working hard. Those Big Radio Midgets to make sure the show is perfect.
Very big of you to mention that.
So, what's cooking?
Well, you know, Ray, it was several weeks ago that we were talking about day parts on the Internet, and we were trying to decide whether there was actually some semblance of demographic breakdown relative to Internet traffic, et cetera. Well, apparently, a study by the Online Publishers Association provides evidence to support the conclusion that five distinct day parts actually exist on the Internet. And here they are, Ray. One, early morning. These are all Monday through Friday except for the last one. Number one, early morning, which is considered 6A to 8A.
Really? I'm surprised it doesn't start at 5. That's interesting.
Apparently, and they see some demographic associations with all of these. Daytime, 8A to 5P.
Okay.
Evening, 5P to 11P. Late night, 11P
to
6A.
To 6A, yeah.
Yeah, and then the weekend, which they just consider all day, Saturday and Sunday. And what's interesting about this, a few of these demographic relative to traffic are not big surprises, but there are a few. Daytime is the largest day part measured in terms of both total audience and total usage, followed by evenings and weekends. Affluent working people between the ages of 25 and 54 make up the largest share of the daytime audience. And children, of course, under the age of 18 are three times more likely to be reached during the evening and weekend day parts. But the interesting part here, Ray, is that Internet utilities such as search engines, email, and chat show little variation in terms of usage by day part, yet online content sites exhibit significant differences in that usage of time of day. For example, use of news and information sites.
Hmm.
It's concentrated more in the early morning and daytime day parts, yet entertainment and sports site usage increases dramatically, no surprise here, during evenings and weekends.
Sure.
So, you know, e-commerce, this was a bigger surprise. The average larger share of e-commerce, on average, the larger share of e-commerce activity, when would you think that would be? During the workday when people have access, maybe?
Well, I would say that, but I'm going to go ahead and say probably is evening time.
And weekends.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
So that was a surprise to me. But they figured out a way to gauge this traffic, and I think it allows advertisers to, you know, weigh this time frame when considering advertising online.
You know, keep in mind, too, a lot of people at work do have computer access. They have high-speed connections and so on and so forth. But there's a lot of restrictions, too, about at work stuff. I mean, you've got somebody in the offices. It's like, no, you can't do that. You're gonna. And it certainly is a distraction, especially if you're doing e-commerce when you're supposed to be doing your own business.
True.
That's not a bad thing. Jeffrey Gittimer is our special guest this quarter hour. Jeff is a what would you call him? Would you call him the sales?
Customer satisfaction
is worthless.
Expert.
Yeah.
he's all about sales, but he's also about customer relations, I think, would be the best way to describe it.
Fun. Take a listen to this. Jeffrey Gittimer on The Advertising Show.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
You ever hear, "I'm satisfied with my present source"? Oh, man. Knowing the reasons why an existing relationship is satisfactory will help you understand how to proceed. I'm satisfied with my present source should bring you to the question of why. Well, here are the top 12.5 reasons your product likes the vendor he's currently using. Number one, he's got great price or a great deal. He's got perceived value. Number two, the quality of the product or service. Number three, he has a special business relationship. Number four, he has a personal relationship. Much stronger. Number five, he has used this supplier for years. Number six, no risk, no hassle, or no problems. He gets what he wants when he wants it. There's no reason to upset the apple cart. He feels safe with the existing status quo. Number seven, here's your opportunity. He doesn't know any better. He only thinks he's getting a good deal or good service. Number eight, the vendor helped me when I needed it. Real tough to break that one. Number nine, great, friendly, immediate service. Number 10, in stock, immediate delivery. Number 11, personalized service, does favors for the guy. Number 12, told by someone else, this is who we buy from. He was referred. And number 12.5, the buyer's just plain lazy. He's got a vendor. He doesn't want to change. He isn't spending his own money because he's not the boss. And maybe the prospect likes the product you have and he just doesn't like you. Now, there's a thought. But if you can find out which one of these 12.5 reasons applies to your situation, you can change the outcome. If you can't, you're wasting your time.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
this is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sure.
Always a hoot on The Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Just about to connect with Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Here at The Advertising Show, we are live online as well as on the radio at theadvertisingshow.com. That's where you can also forward your questions to if you have any questions that you'd like us to answer here
and
on the show.
I am receiving tons of email in here, Ray. I'm looking online at our closed email access from listeners, and apparently there's a lot of interest in cable television, and we're receiving many emails as we speak. So I'll be looking forward to covering a lot of that with Kevin in just a second.
Beautiful. Well, stay with us for that this hour. On The Advertising Show, talking about the web stuff just a few moments ago, the British government unveiled proposals recently to crack down on the sending of unsolicited commercial emails.
Oh, I've heard about
that. Spam. Spam now accounts for 40% of global email traffic, much to the annoyance of the recipients. What did you say? What you got? Spam blocker? Is that what you got on your computer?
Right.
Now the government plans to make it illegal to send spam unless those on the receiving end have given their prior consent. Think about spam is once you get it, it's hard to get rid of it, kind of like poison ivy. And just as annoying, too.
Well, that's one
because
thing.
What they do is they'll make you go in there and say, okay, you want to unsubscribe, let's hear see a whole bunch of stuff, which is another scheme that a lot of these people do. So
what is it? The spam police are going to be circling
like
your
that.
Building or what?
It'll be real interesting. The proposals, which are now open to consultation, mark the UK implementation of the European Union directive on privacy and electronic communications. It's due to take effect in October. So in the meantime, you're going to get spammed Maybe once, maybe twice, maybe more.
Well, with the no call laws coming into place here in the U.S. for the phone solicitors, I'm all for both that and the spam blocking.
I love it.
Folks.
Can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah,
can't wait for the interview to get underway too with Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau, here on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, and that is coming up next.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are.
Back with you on the Advertising Show is our topic today is cable television. So why would we be playing the Three's Company theme? Well, as you well know, John Ritter is a big part of the whole TV land exposure and
sure.
the cable. And, you know, they're running those shows on there. Kevin Berry is our special guest. Kevin is Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Kevin got his start in cable as an account executive for Cablevision on Long Island back in 1985, back when he was just a youngster, right?
He's a pole climber, too, I think.
No? Yeah, I don't know. We'll ask him. He got his start in advertising as an account rep for the Long Island Newsday in 1983. 89 to 96, director of local ad sales at Discovery Communications, and, of course, as vice president since 96 of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. It's always great to have Kevin on the show, and Kevin is, Kevin's second time on the show, is that right?
Second or third, I can't remember. How many times have you been on the show, Kevin?
This is the third.
Third.
Third, okay, wow.
Well, that's some kind of record, isn't it?
Must have been off that weekend, I guess. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think I was, too.
Anyway, it's good to have you on the show, Kevin, and we're going to talk for the next quite a while here about cable television and the advertising that takes place there.
So very briefly, Kevin, for those maybe not familiar with the CAB, talk a little bit about your purpose, who are your members, and is it something that generally the public can access good information from?
We are a trade association that represents the advertising interests of America's cable TV networks and America's cable TV operators. So Discovery and ESPN and Turner Networks are all members of the CAB, as well as Comcast and AOL, Time Warner and Charter and Cox and others. And we represent about 65 cable networks, and that's just about all of them. And we represent cable subscribers who serve about 95% of America's cable subscribers, so just about the whole industry, with respect to selling advertising. In terms of the public's access to what we do maintain a public website at cabletvadbureau.com,
mm-hmm.
and that's a site for advertisers or agencies or even just the curious general public to learn more about our medium, learn more about the special values that we represent to advertisers and marketers, as well as to seek out links to our members to help you do business with them.
Well, that's interesting. We have several email questions. I'm going to jump right in and get to one. And several of these email questions are all about interested in TiVo and wanting to get your take on TiVo. For those not familiar, PVRs, personal video recorders, digital cable, which, of course, is now a version of subscribers to cable being able to access similar type hardware or software, I should say, as TiVo when you subscribe to these kind of things. Where do you see PVRs, TiVo, digital cable going, and is it really going to have such an impact on the advertising community as they are suggesting it will?
There was a cover article in the New York Times Magazine about 2 years ago, and it showed an exploding box of Kellogg's Corn Flakes cereal and on top of a TV set, and it said the end of TV advertising as we know it with a question mark, and it was about this issue. Of course, the killer app, and killer has more than one meaning here, the app that could kill advertising as we know it is the ability to zip through commercials with a personal video recorder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really tough topic. And I know I'm working for a trade association, and I should have a glib write-off for a very promising technology. But you know, I've also learned in the time I've been in business that nobody ever got rich limiting the choices that consumers can make.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, consumers like to have that flexibility.
Good point.
And that's on the one side of the ledger, and that is, you know, people, you know, they like to see commercials for products that they're interested in, but they don't like the ones that they're not interested in, and they're going to zip through commercials if the commercial isn't, you know, terribly interesting to them. On the other side of the coin, you know, Mel Karmazin, who's the president of Viacom, which operates CBS and operates MTV networks, he says, you know, we produce all of this great free programming, and under that he included the basic cable TV programming, which isn't quite free but isn't terribly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And all we ask is that you watch our commercials. And, you know, so when there's a million people in the country, as there are now, with a TiVo or a PVR device, you can fast forward through the commercials and there's not going to be much of an impact on the overall advertising model. When it gets to 20 or 30 or 40 million people with this capability, it's something's going to have to give. Now, that's about as dark as I can paint the picture.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that it changes your behavior. So, for instance, you know, right now, something like 70% of DVR subscribers, that's digital video recorder, and sometimes I'll call it a PVR, that's a personal video recorder, and sometimes I'll call it a TiVo, they're all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
70% of those subscribers will fast forward through some commercials. At the same time, 65% of TV viewers do what during commercial breaks?
Go to the bathroom.
They go to the bathroom. They surf.
Sure.
They do something else. Now,
get a cold drink.
So commercial avoidance is not new, and in fact, there's still enough people who are influenced by what we like to think is the most powerful medium ever come up with, and
mm-hmm.
that's television, the sight, sound, motion, emotion, that it still works, despite the fact that
people leave
will use this
set,
to
right.
get a sandwich or,
sure.
you know, make a you know, a trip to the bathroom.
You know, I think people, Ray and Kevin, you tell me, are making a big ado here about maybe more than we need to be concerned about. Think about radio many years ago,
right.
decades ago. Can you imagine the conversation, Ray, going something like this? They have those damn buttons now on radio, and they're going to be able to switch around.
Oh,
and
man.
You know,
yeah.
So I think the point here maybe is it becomes incumbent upon advertisers, I guess, to get more creative with their TV commercials, or they're not going to hold their viewers whether they have PVRs or any other item.
Right.
Well, here's another way to look at it. You might end up with a subscription model. I mean, people
mm-hmm.
like the convenience of being able to fast forward through a commercial. Will they pay for it? I'm not sure. I think some might and some might not. So you might have a PVR that allows you to fast forward through the commercials if you're willing to pay an extra $4 a month for that ability so that the people that produce television programs can still be paid to produce those television programs that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose not to pay the extra $4, then you know, you'll watch the commercials. The opportunity that arises, by the way, is you know, you can store all this programming. What happens is the programming gets stored in a hard drive on top of your TV set, gets played back over your TV set. The current advertising model for, you know, for advertisers is you place an ad in a particular program that you guess is going to reach a certain house, and
mm-hmm.
you hope that they're tuned into the program when your commercial runs. And, you know, just whatever happens to be streaming by, they might tap into it. Imagine this. Imagine commercials being also stored in that head end, and that rather than buying a schedule where you're estimating that you'll gain 100,000 household impressions per week, that in fact 100,000 household impressions play out of a PVR throughout a whole area that has them, and at the end of the 100,000 impressions, that buy's done.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a level of precision in your marketing.
That's a scary level.
Certainly a level of targeting that we haven't, you know, really experienced even with cable to date. So it is a challenging technology, but I think one that will also unlock some interesting new applications for advertisers.
Certainly accountability becomes something that benefits now advertisers, so that's a good thing.
We're talking today with Kevin Berry, who's the Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Find out more, you can go on to cabletvadbureau.com. That's cabletvadbureau.com. We also have the Advertising Show online at theadvertisingshow.com. Hope you're enjoying the program today. Discussion's not over. The wacky world of marketing and advertising coming up here in just a minute with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and more if you'll stay with us.
time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update for this week heads to Atlanta, where the New York Daily News reports they may expect Southern charm. But some Belt South Internet customers found the service was a little too friendly when they called a toll-free number listed in the phone book. For those of you who wonder if the Yellow Pages works, the number for a phone sex operation was mistakenly printed in most of the 50 million residential phone books the company sent out in the past year. The mistake was caught when a customer complained. The wrong number was listed in the front customer guide section of the White Pages. However, the correct number was still under the appropriate heading in the business listings. Bell South had considered buying the phone sex operations number to avoid confusion with its customers, but then abandoned that idea. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
It's back with you on The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. In the background there is good old Sanford and Son.
Brad.
Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Here I come. Started off on, what was it, CBS, I think?
You know, it goes so far back, I don't really recall the network, but it certainly was a huge ratings winner for whoever that was that broke with that.
And now it's on cable, of course, which is really, really cool. So we're talking today about cable television advertising. Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau, it's Kevin Berry. Find out more at cabletvadbureau.com. And back with Kevin. Kevin, thanks for being a part of the show today.
Sure.
You know, Kevin, we have a question from James out of Houston asking about consolidation and what impact this has had in broadcast overall as well as cable in particular.
Well, I can speak for cable, and I'll speak about local markets. There's different kinds of consolidation. I think the kind of consolidation that hinders competition or eliminates competition is maybe not such a good thing for people that are in the buying community. In the case of cable, though, and I'll looking specifically at Houston, you had, 10 years ago, you had three or four different cable operators. You had Prime, you had TCI, and you had Time Warner, as well as perhaps some others, who were all selling cable TV, but they were selling in different neighborhoods. And if you wanted to buy cable in Houston, you had to place three different phone calls to reach those people that were selling it in each of the different areas, each of the different neighborhoods of Houston. Through consolidation and through the fact that Time Warner, or AOL Time Warner, now is the sole cable operator in Houston, you only have to make one phone call. But remember, the bad thing about consolidation is when it hinders competition. Well, these guys weren't competing before. They sold different neighborhoods. They're exactly not overlapping neighborhoods. That's the way the cable works. You know, each company has its own franchise.
Is this typical of most major markets?
That's typical of the whole country. Mm-hmm. Sure, the consolidation that's taking place in the cable industry is being driven by the cable companies desiring more operating efficiencies to offer high-speed data or telephone service or better advertising services for the local advertisers. But you're not, once again, These are companies that didn't used to compete. You didn't have Prime Cable competing with AOL Time Warner. Each had their own discrete area. So consolidation in the cable business, I contend, has been nothing but a boon for advertisers because it's streamlined the buying process and made it easier for them to use our medium.
Well, you might suggest the same thing for radio, too. I mean, if you look at a Clear Channel or a CBS Infinity, that's the same thing.
Let me point out, remember I said where it eliminates competition, and I know I'm talking on a radio station, but cable companies served exactly discrete neighborhoods. They did not overlap before.
Okay.
The cable companies that are being acquired by Clear Channel within a market did compete for listeners.
You mean the radio stations, yes.
The radio stations did compete for listeners in the same exact market and now offer those same listeners to an advertiser. Now some on the radio side will say, hey, we're just trying to keep up with the media consolidation that's taking place on the agency side. and in fact, on the agency side, the consolidation, there are four four ad agencies that are left, you know, that control maybe 90% of the spending in this country.
Right. Well, that may
so,
be
you know, they may have a point there, but in terms of competition and in terms of benefits to the advertiser, I think most local advertisers would say that radio consolidation has not been to their benefit. And yet, if you really looked at it, most of them would say that the streamlining of the buying process in cable has been something that's...
I guess that's my reference point. The point of reference is specifically that. If you want a particular demographic, you can use that one media outlet to reach those people.
Well, and I'm going to argue, Ray, in defense of what you said, and being an agency guy, I've seen both the days of non-consolidation and consolidation. And for those savvy enough to purchase media, be it from a Clear Channel or a Infinity or any other cluster, those really being the main two clusters in a major market, you can actually purchase a combined effort through one broadcast company,
right,
and get your rates much more attractively than the days of just buying one station owned by one company.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of benefit there. I certainly understand Kevin's point in terms of limiting competition, and I think there's you know, arguments on both sides that need to be, you know, are worthy of addressing. I have an email again from Betty, who is a media buyer at an ad agency in Palm Springs. She mentions or she asked the question, Kevin, how have alternative delivery systems, which is another way of saying satellite dishes, I suppose, affected cable exposure?
Well, what did you have to ask that for?
Well, I know it's a sore subject in your business, but it's apparently
well,
Betty
yeah,
wants
let,
to know.
Actually, I'm glad she asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the glib trade association answer would be to say, well, you know, it's really not that great a technology, and when it rains, people lose their picture. And so it's not. I'm not worried about it. That would be a very foolish position for me to take.
Mm-hmm.
DBS, or Direct Broadcast Satellite, and that's EchoStar and DirecTV, are a compelling application. You know, and they've offered real competition to America's cable operators. I think they've forced America's cable operators to become more competitive. I don't think you would have seen the rollout of digital cable as quickly as you otherwise have were it not for those competitors. And that's an example of our free enterprise system working right and competition being good for consumers and I think even for the companies that are competing. DBS has grown to cover something like 17 to 18% of the country today. And yet it would be, you know, some might think, well, therefore cable must be losing something. And cable has not lost subscribers or at least viewership as a result of the growth of satellite.
Tell you what, can we hang on to that thought here for just a minute, Kevin? We'll get you back here in just a moment on The Advertising Show. It's Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth talking today with Kevin Berry, VP of Local Sales and Marketing for the Cable Television Advertising Bureau.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
It's back with The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, the Dick Van Dyke Show theme. There's a show that, 1960s show that was a big, big hit for several years on the regular television or, you know, mainstream TV back then. Well, they didn't even have cable back then.
Well, just,
what
yeah.
am I saying? But now it's a big thing with TV Land. And of course, they had the TV Land Awards just a little while back. Dick Van Dyke was a part of that presentation. Carl Reiner, who was the writer or a participant on the show, had said, well, maybe I can get you guys back together and get you back on for another, you know, another appearance altogether. Of course, Maury Amsterdam has passed away, but all the other folks are there. Ironically, they had Richie, the little kid, on.
What's he look like now?
Looks like Richie all grown up. He hasn't been doing much of anything. Reiner didn't even remember his name.
So did they have Dick trip over an ottoman when he came out?
No, they didn't. Oh. No, he's too old for that. But yeah. Mary Tyler Moore was there, and it was good to see them all. Rose Marie, of course, was there as part of that, too. Our guest today on The Advertising Show is Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. If you want to find out more while you're listening to the show, you can go online at cabletvadbureau.com. Kevin, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I'd like to thank all the listeners for the wonderful email we're receiving as well. On a personal interest from my end, I'd like to ask about the Nielsen rating changes that just took place recently and how that has affected local cable ratings. Kevin, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Until later this year, and traditionally, cable needed to have a higher weekly cume to appear in the Nielsen book. Specifically, cable needed to have a cable network needed to have a 19.5% weekly cumulative audience to even show up in the day part section of the Nielsen book and the viewers in profile, the VIP, and needed a 49.5% weekly cume to show up in the program specific or time specific part of the book, because it was defined as an out of market signal. Whereas broadcast TV, which we compete against, only needed a 9.5% weekly cume for any individual programs to show up in that part of the book.
Which translates to meaning very little, if any, local cable programs were ever rated.
Were ever showing up in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Right.
Now, the viewership's always been there. What's been missing is the reporting of the viewership. So we're very happy that as the result of our Committee on Local Cable Audience Measurement and frankly, great work by the Nielsen Company, we're going to All we're asking is that we be measured by the same barometer as broadcast TV is, and so the cumulative audience will be 9.5%. That's the requirement for both media, and that'll be a great thing for advertisers, because they'll get a chance to compare both media side by side.
So it levels the playing field, I guess, for both broadcast
and
cable. What are your thoughts on product placement? I guess, that's nothing new, whether it's on broadcast or cable. Where do you see product placement going, Kevin?
There's a woman named Lori Coots who works for Shiat Day, who had the greatest line about this. She said, "Do you remember when the very beginning of desktop publishing, and everybody first had a computer on their desk, and what you got was people writing letters where every single line was a different font, because you could,
right.
And you had the most god awful looking pieces that were put together because we had that freedom."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "The first few years of product placement are going to be so shockingly, horribly in bad taste that we'll laugh at it years later." So the early attempts that we're seeing now, I think, are really ham-handed. I think that eventually it's going to evolve as a business, but I don't think that product placement is ever going to rival traditional media placement as a basis for a brand. You really need to have already, I think, a pretty significant brand equity to have someone recognize that Coke can in the episode.
Well,
for a new product or even a brand extension to break through, you really need to use traditional advertising.
I'm reading a lot recently about how the public has become a bit jaded with product placement. I know we all are of a common age between Kevin, myself, and Ray, in that we can remember not so many years ago when Seinfeld was one of the precursor of the industry as far as broadcast television, and including various serials and other products on its program. And I think at that time, in our more naive time as a public viewing audience, as far as industry people, but the viewership in general probably saw the product and did not think of it as an actual placement. What do you think as opposed to today, Kevin? Is it viewed differently today?
Yeah, people are savvy. I mean, consumers of media, we practice so much. We practice by watching by 4 hours of television a day. We practice by listening to a couple of hours of radio a day. We practice by reading a newspaper for a half an hour a day. We practice with media so much that, we're not dumb. And I think that people see through the really obvious examples. Maybe it's up to the creative minds to make those product placements more subversive so that they'll be more effective.
Kevin, we are, believe it or not, out of time here. Time goes quickly here on The Advertising Show. We got a lot of great information. I want to thank you for being a part of the show. Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. On The Advertising Show, find out more at cabletvadbureau.com, and we'll be right back.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Back for one final segment here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, The Andy Griffith Show, now in on cable, everywhere, kind of like I Love Lucy and all those shows, too. It's great show.
Who would have ever thought that you're now the same age as Aunt B?
Yeah, but at least I'm alive. You know?
Oh,
come
my
on.
Goodness.
Kevin Berry, Vice President, Cable Television Advertising Bureau, is our guest today. And if you didn't catch the website, here it is again. It's cabletvadbureau.com. We encourage you to go there because there's a lot of good information for you.
You know, Ray, I was going to mention to Kevin, and it's too late because he's gone, but the next time we have him as a guest on the show, I was going to ask if we could allocate like a 6 or 7 hour window and ask him to be waiting for our call to see when we wanted him on the air.
Just sometime between noon and 6?
Yeah, just to get back at the cable industry. What do you think? Can we do that?
No, we can't do that.
He's a real treat to have on, and very, very interesting aspect to cable to have these interesting industry trade guys on.
He also does a really great live presentation, too, with regards to the cable advertising industry. So if you'd like to see him in your area, go to the cabletvadbureau.com site, and you can find out more. So that's Kevin Berry. Diane Simony is going to be with us next Saturday, April the 12th. Diane is president and media strategist with Simony Enterprises. And like Kevin, we'll be talking to her out of New York next week.
Outdoor advertising expert. If you ever wanted to know anything about outdoor, she is the lady to hear talk about that. Ray, I don't know if you've heard about this, but you can say goodbye to Paul Hogan. And hello to Lance Armstrong, because Lance
is the new guy
for Subaru.
I'll be.
Timmerlin McLean designed the ads. That's a campaign that's entitled Subaru, Driven by What's Inside, will break in mid-April and will consist of television, national newspaper and print ads, and outdoor. Armstrong will be shown on various bikes. Is that a surprise?
Yeah.
And in various Subaru vehicles. So there's a guy. Yeah, I guess he still lives in Austin, Texas, as I recall. Unfortunately, I read something in the last few months about he and his wife getting a divorce. I don't know that there's...
He's been through a lot, too, health-wise as well.
He has, and I would hate to hear that because I know they have a young child, and they seem to make the perfect couple, but, you know, that kind of thing happens, I guess.
You know, Hogan, when was the last time he had a hit movie?
He threw a Bowie knife of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, how many years ago was that?
Yeah.
It's about time to make a change.
Anyway, I would think.
He probably was caught driving a Honda.
On the wrong side of the street.
On the wrong side of the road. Yeah. You're out, Paul.
Yeah.
You're out. The number of Internet users in the United States will peak at 80% of the country's citizens, or about three-fourths of American households. That's according to a report from a researcher, eMarketer, it's called, or Marketeer. Right now, 55% of the United States population uses the Internet, according to Ben Macklin, senior analyst at the New York-based eMarketer. That's about 58% of U.S. households. At the end of last year, 153 million people online in this country, and about 10 million expected to adopt the net this year. We talked about advertising a little while ago, and this is something, you know, AOL... Or is it AOL? I guess it's AOL as a commercial based on the Bionic Man.
Hmm.
Remember where they got the little running guy? Well, the Bionic Man was formed because he got in a bad accident. So do you want to parallel AOL, the old AOL,
from
is having a bad accident to now we'll make him better?
That's funny.
It's to me, it's off center as far as how they'd want to brand that thing. You know, what we sold you 2 years ago
is broken.
Really sucked, but it was broken, but we fixed it and we're going to make it better than new. So that's AOL.
That's interesting. I have seen that now that you remind me, and it's something I saw recently on AdCritic, adcritic.com, a great place to go to see commercials and actually streamed through your internet there,
right.
And where we found the badvertising item last hour that we featured. You mentioned some numbers. Here's some interesting numbers, Ray. A new study by Informa Media predicts that there will be 96.7 million digital television households around the world by year's end. That represents a nearly 20% increase from year-end 2002, when about 81 million households had digital TV. Now, no surprise here, North America has the highest penetration with 42% of all households. And just for a comparison, the world's average is 10%. So
really?
America out in front, or North America, I should say.
Right.
And just, you know, echoing what Kevin was saying earlier during the interview, digital is something that is coming.
Yeah.
And between digital and satellite, I'm often asking, as we talked about during the interview, do people really know where that program originates, whether it's broadcast or cable programming?
Of course they don't.
Right.
No, it's all somewhere connected with digital and satellite, right?
Right.
Have you seen the Michael Essany show at all?
I have, and I find that a very interesting program, and I nothing better than to see a kid like that make it.
Yeah, he's very talented. They I understand he was on Jay Leno.
I don't recall
seeing that.
I saw it briefly, and I don't know about you, Ray, but when you see him, he is really a clone, a young version of Johnny Carson. He does Johnny very well.
Yeah, he does. You can tell there's a passion there for Carson, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's been fun today talking with Kevin Berry, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. And, again, go to CableTVAdBureau.com.
Well, we'll continue the conversation about Michael Essany next week, because I have a little piece here that I'm going to talk about, Michael, and I'm sure you had something yourself, too.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
We'll come back next week and talk about
Great
that.
Great guy. Hope you can join us next week. Our special guest is Diane Simony, President and Media Strategist, Simony Enterprises out of New York. We'll be talking outdoor media. Today it was cable television advertising, and next week it's outdoor media. And we, of course, invite your questions here at the Advertising Show online at theadvertisingshow.com. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit them online at adage.com. This is the Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. We look forward to seeing you and being with you next week. Bye-bye.